From JetBooks, this is Irish Business Builders, a show about great Irish businesses and the people who built them. Head to jetbooks.ie/resources to pick up our free step-by-step guide on how to automate your bookkeeping.
All the problems that I face are have been faced by someone else before. There's an easy solution to them. And, you know, my emotional reaction to those things is actually not very important. It's just there's a practical solution to everything.
I'm Conor Carney, and today we have a slightly different episode of the podcast as Brenton Ward, who I interviewed back in episode 2, becomes the host of Irish Business Builders and interviews me. We discuss how the podcast came about and the lessons I've learned interviewing some of Ireland's most successful business people. We also talk about my own business journey with JetBooks, alongside topics such as bootstrapping, strengths, weaknesses, books, and bits of advice I've picked up along the way. So for the next 45 minutes, I'll leave you in the very capable hands of your guest host, Brenton Ward.
Conor Carney. Host becomes guest.
Yeah.
A very big welcome to you.
Thanks, Brenton.
I want to start out by looking back to sort of April 2020, when the world was going into lockdown. We didn't know what was going to happen. You said, I think I want to start a podcast, guys. What do you think? Mm. And we're literally to the day, June 29th, 12 months on from the first episode that you released. And you've had 40 fantastic guests since, or thereabouts. And it's 12 months on. So I just want to start by saying a massive congratulations for taking what was an idea to implementing something to now sharing the stories of some incredible people in Ireland. So a very big congratulations to you on your podcast and your 12-month anniversary of it being live on the airwaves.
Yeah, thanks very much. It's been an enjoyable, very enjoyable run so far, and hopefully that will continue into the future.
I have no doubt. So today's episode, I want to put you on the other side of the table. I'm sure you get a lot of questions about your guests, but you also get quite a few questions about yourself and your business, and I'd like to explore some of those in this episode today, if it's okay with you.
Absolutely. I'm excited.
Let's start with the podcast itself, because I'd love for you to share your story as to why you actually wanted to start this show in the first place. So let's start there.
Firstly, I think I started the podcast initially for selfish reasons. My favorite thing to do is to kind of question people, business owners especially, and just dig in, try and find the things that, you know, what made them successful, and what were the kind of things they went through that were really difficult, really hard to do, and how they've kind of dealt with that and come out the other side. It was just one of those things that seemed to fit very well with what I was doing already with JetBooks, because it was business owners, and it was providing, you know, the listeners with more stories, more help with their businesses and everything else. So it was all that kind of came together at a time when, as you said, the world was falling apart. In some ways, we didn't really know what was happening. And so I actually had a bit more time to focus on things like this. And I think everyone started thinking about what they liked doing a little bit more and maybe decided to change direction a little bit. And for me, that was the podcast.
Mm-hmm. From the audience's perspective as well, you do get this really unique glimpse into their life. I mean, we share an office with Will Sparks, who you interviewed on his journey with Sparks. Mm-hmm. Well, we literally sit beside each other every day, but I learned more about Will in that 45-minute episode that I really understood. I hadn't understood or known a lot of the facts about his journey to date. So, I mean, getting that insight, Susie McAdam, listening to her story and then seeing her in, you know, the House of the Year episodes, you felt like you knew her already. Like, you've really, whether you intended to do this or not, you've created this little community of, you know, really like-minded people. You know, seeing you do the podcast, it's something that lights your fire, you know, whether you had any intention of it to lead anywhere. I think just by the sheer enjoyment of doing it, you would continue on doing it anyway. But talk to me about the connection between the podcast and ultimately getting results or better outcomes for JetBooks, your business, which we'll talk about in this episode. But has the podcast itself had any effect on JetBooks and the growth of JetBooks?
Yes. So, you know, my network has definitely grown from it. But as you say, you know, I would do the podcast. Like, the podcast probably net costs me more money than I've made directly, you know, if you want to put a monetary stamp on it. So I'm technically paying to do it. But there's just so many other things and benefits that I get from it. Like, it goes back to that idea of flow. You know, are you kind of doing something that you really enjoy? And are you kind of working within your own strengths as such, or, you know, working in things you like doing? Because if you're doing something that you're in that's in your flow, it doesn't feel like work. You can do that all day, every day. And I think definitely, even, you know, in JetBooks, my favorite thing is to meet business owners, whether it's kind of potential new clients and finding out all about their business initially, or whether it's kind of old clients, not old, you know, by age or whatever, but, you know, kind of clients that we've had for a long time, and discussing them what their issues are, and more the kind of the personal side of it. So I love doing that. I'm kind of in my flow doing that. The podcast, it just allows me to work within my flow more so. It gives me an excuse, basically.
Connor, you are a young guy, but you've got a world of experience. Even in your short number of years, you've been walking this planet. You've got a very entrepreneurial spirit, which I think really shines and comes out in your intrigue and interest in the podcast, but also with what you've done with JetBooks. Has this entrepreneurial flair, the desire to be a successful business owner, has this always been the case? Talk to us a little bit about your personal history.
You know, I don't think it's ever been something that I said I would definitely do is to start a business. But it came about really because I had started my career in a big four firm in KPMG, and I'd worked there for a number of years. And just during that time, I kind of got the sense that I would prefer to work for myself. And it's probably to do with my own kind of weaknesses or whatever. You know, it's to do with maybe I wasn't able to take feedback particularly well. So, you know, those things kind of sting, and I kind of go, oh, well, you know, I could do better than this, you know, which is probably definitely not true, especially when it comes to, you know, one of the biggest accountancy firms in the world. But, you know, those things kind of push you into doing what you want to do, and kind of you get an idea. Again, it goes back to flow, you know. What is it, if you don't like doing something day to day, you will kind of find out what you like doing as a result of that. So it's come about that way. And then I suppose even within the business, you know, you have to do things that you might not necessarily be very strong at or very good at, or that you don't like doing. And you have to kind of work your way around those things as well. So it has more come about from experience and just from trying out different things. And I think that's actually really important. Like, anytime someone younger than me, or someone who's maybe just leaving college or whatever, asks me for advice, all college, you know, people in college, all college students are always really worried about, oh, like, you know, if I, like, will I take this job? You know, I've been offered a job here. Should I take it? And like, why not? Like, yes, you should definitely do it. If you don't like it, you can stop doing it after a year. You're just learning, you know, what you like doing and what you don't like doing.
Okay. Talk to me about then being a business owner. You know, we're a couple of years into this journey of having started JetBooks. What's the hardest part for you about being a business owner?
Wearing all the hats in the business and having to do everything. I probably mentioned that earlier, because it is very difficult. You know, if you like doing something, like, call it sales or maybe the relationship side of the business, you know, there's so many other things, and your weaknesses really get highlighted when you run a business, especially when you have a team like we do now. So Mark, who's our senior client manager, who lives in Ballybunion, works from Ballybunion, you know, he has come into the business in the last 6 or 8 months, and he's very organized, whereas I'm not. So it's a good balancing act. But ultimately, when he point something out in the list, I'm like, oh, well, obviously that's not organized because I just wouldn't have thought about that, or I didn't think it was a problem. But, you know, there's a lot of things like kind of attention to detail, which for an accountant, you might think is a bit strange, but I've always been more people orientated than I have been detail and operations and spreadsheet orientated. And I find those things very hard. But you just have to do these things when you don't have the resources in the business. You have to kind of get them up to a level that you're kind of okay at. You know, I try to focus on my strengths in the business, but I know that I do have to do those other things and get them up to a point where I'm not annoying everyone on the team. I mean, I you know, naturally I do just annoy them because I'm disorganized or whatever, but you know, in other ways I can support them too. So I would say that's the hardest part for me is switching, you know, maybe switching between say marketing, staff meeting, and maybe then a sales call. You know, though I find those moving from one thing to the next difficult, mm-hmm. but you kind of have to bring your weaknesses up to a point that they're okay and that they're not detrimental to the business.
We share quite a passion for understanding what makes a good business, a great business tick. And one of the fundamental resources we lean on in that regard is a book by Michael Gerber, The E-Myth, which I know you've mentioned a couple of times throughout the series. Michael talks about having the balance between being the entrepreneur, the manager, and the technician. And any successful business needs a really good balance of all of those three. Typically, the owner or the founder of the business leans towards one of those three as their dominant characteristic or their character. What would you say out of those three, entrepreneur, manager, technician, which one would be your dominant character?
I mean, managing people in the business, which yeah. I very much actually enjoy doing, not like trying not to micromanage people. And that's something I'm still learning about, really, you know, when hiring a team and everything, is leaving them do what they're best at. Mm-hmm. And if I'm not actually particularly good at that thing, then what am I doing getting in their way or whatever? So I'm kind of enjoying that journey as a manager and as a kind of leader of people. And I have a huge amount of fun, you know, with the team. I like all our team members and everything else. So I do love that side of it. The entrepreneur side, I assume that's more...
That's your vision. You're a very visionary focused person. You know, you're leading the charge. You've got the ideas. You're fairly focused on the future. You know, I, as an observer looking in, I would have said that that's probably your dominant character. But then having seen you, you know, everyone can wear those three hats, but it's where most of your time and effort's placed, and then resourcing those other, you know, the areas that you're less dominant in, which you've done very well, by the way.
Well, I agree that I love, you know, thinking about the future, thinking about the vision, thinking about where we're going. At the size the business is now, you end up having still to do a bit of everything. So I would agree with you. And it's probably reflected in the podcast, actually, in the questions that I ask. You know, I always ask, what are your strengths? What are your weaknesses? Because I'm also trying for me to see how did this person deal with those particular things. You know, most business owners have a good sense of what they're not good at and what they're good at. You know, people tend to be just better at certain things than they are at others. And it comes back to that wise principle of the finders, minders, and grinders. Mm-hmm. You know, in an accounting firm, some people are very good at grinding. They're very good at productive accounting work, getting the balance sheet right and all that kind of stuff that might necessarily interest a minder who's a good manager of people, has a good level of empathy for the team, mm-hmm. and trying to bring the team along and their goals and everything else. And then the finder, who's kind of more of a salesperson finding business, maybe looking more at kind of strategy and things like that. It's more finding a path for the business and obviously finding business and sales. So, you know, it's a key thing that I do think about a lot is, you know, what are people good at? And then subsequently, what am I good at? And I don't know whether I'm good at anything, actually, you know, but I know what I like, you sure. know? So, and I think if you like something, you will get better at it.
And what's your opinion then? There's a lot of commentary from business influencers on doubling down on your strengths and outsourcing your weaknesses, as opposed to trying to get better at skills that you're less inclined to be good at or you don't have a lot of experience in. From your experience building JetBooks, would you agree with that opinion, or do you believe that you should find a balance between the two? What's your thoughts on that?
You definitely need a balance if the thing that you are bad at is going to be detrimental to the future of the business. So, you know, I'm not great at bookkeeping, but when it was only me, I had to do all the bookkeeping. So I couldn't say, well, I'm not going to do any bookkeeping, or I'm bad at this, so I'm going to just not try and get better at it, because ultimately that was what I was providing to customers. So, like, you do have to be, so as I said earlier about kind of being disorganized, I have to actually be organized as a business owner, or get to a point where it's not crazy, you know, where it's not out of control. Because if you're completely, you know, one way and you just don't focus on anything, you'll never really improve in something that's kind of so fundamental to your life as a business person. Yeah, I would agree that you need to focus on your strengths, because you'll never get anywhere if you don't, but you definitely need some level of bringing your weakness up to the point where they don't hamper you.
So we're 3 years on into the journey of JetBooks now, thereabouts. Looking back over that time, what to you has been the most rewarding part of starting your own business?
This will sound like I'm dodging the question, but I love everything about running a business.
It's definitely dodging the question.
Like, even the things I don't like, I love, you know, because I'm doing it for myself. And that was, for me, before I actually went to start my own business, I was kind of worried that I wouldn't enjoy, I wasn't sure whether I'd like it or not, because I hadn't actually done it, but I kind of had this feeling that I would. And that it has been everything I thought it would be and more by starting the business. So, you know, but I suppose if I was to really nail it down, you know, the most rewarding things are feeling useful. Let's say get a new client and you provide a service for them, and then you're getting really good feedback from that client about how things are going, and it's really helpful, and you've sorted out their problems. That sense, and maybe it's an ego thing, but you know, you're when you're being told that, you're like, wow, you know, I did that, you know, and I was able to do something for a particular person, and I was able to kind of tell them what I would do, and it worked out better for them in the end. So that's really rewarding. That to me has been brilliant. I love being switched on and thinking about the business the whole time. It does create some anxiety, but even just thinking about that the whole time and being switched on is good. And I've always enjoyed that part of the business. So even the things that are difficult are enjoyable.
You talk there about being switched on, and for any business or anyone who started a business, being switched on and having it being all consuming is certainly something that you have to get comfortable with. What's your view on balance, life balance, balancing life between building a business and having a great, enjoyable life? I've been really interested in this topic recently because everyone's telling you you need to find balance. Even if your business is something you're incredibly passionate about, it can be all-consuming. So where do you stand on the conversation around finding balance? Because on one side, it's, well, you've chosen to go down this path. Things have to give when you're growing a business. You still have to find the time to spend with friends and family and the things you enjoy. But how do you feel about it 3 years in? Are you finding balance? Is what balance to you was 3 years ago the same as what it is today? What's that ideal lifestyle for you look like now?
It's very hard to get that equation perfectly right the whole time. You know, this time is for work and this time is for, hanging out with my wife and family. This time is for hanging out with friends. You know, it's very difficult to get that right. And you're dealing with as well, you know, what other people might want. You know, I had heard one thing that there's a guy I was listening to on a podcast, funnily enough, in the States, and he was saying that he finds it difficult that he goes, okay, I'm going to spend this time with my family. You know, I'm going to leave work at 6 p.m. every day. I'm going to go home and spend it with family. But when he gets home, you know, his son, who's kind of two, has been up all day and he's wrecked and he's crying and, you know, he won't go to bed and he's kind of misbehaving. And he was getting frustrated because that was, oh, this is supposed to be quality time with my son or happy families. And now my son is acting up because he's a 2-year-old and he's been tired all day and I'm wrecked from work. So, you know, this isn't, I'm not enjoying this. I don't think you can control it, but you can definitely, I personally wouldn't want to let any of those other areas fall because they're just so important. If you can get them to interact, great. But ultimately, you know, friendship's extremely important. Family is extremely important. And if you're all business, you're just going to be a boring person anyway. And these are things that going through the kind of mentorship with Mick has helped in as well, because it's not just focused on the business. There's a lot of business stuff in it and, you know, your income and why that's important and everything else. But, you know, there's other key areas. You know, how much time are you spending with your family? And it's putting actually goes into a quantifiable, you know, how many times have I actually seen this person? Mm-hmm. How many times have I actually gone to visit my grandmother? Mm-hmm. How many times this month have I seen this particular friend? And like actually writing down who the people are that you want to see and making sure you see them. And when you score yourself on a weekly basis, you can see whether you're letting the ball drop. And that's, I actually don't like, so that might seem a bit calculated and a bit cold way of doing things and that, but I think if you're not really focused on those things, they do just fall by the wayside. And you go, oh, I haven't seen that person in 2 months. And, you know, I used to see that person all the time, but now I've got the business and, or maybe I've got a kid now or something. But I think you will always let things fall if you're not focused on them. For me anyway, if it's not on the spreadsheet and I'm not scoring it, I will forget about that person, you know, because I'll figure something else will pop up and I'll do that. And, you know, and then all of a sudden I'm kind of unhappy because I haven't seen these people. So, yeah.
Spoken like a true accountant.
I can't do anything unless it's on a spreadsheet. That's it. Yeah.
What would you say if you had to pinpoint anything? Is there any major sacrifice you've had to make in getting JetBooks to where it is today across all of those things?
When you bootstrap a business, it is all consuming. But the other thing that happens is that you have no money, and you have no money for a long time. And you actually can't go, you know, for a big night out or anything, because, you know, you're going to be hungover for a day or 2 days at this stage of the age I am now. And that's going to prevent you from performing in work. And if that's going to prevent you performing in work, it's going to prevent you from earning what you actually need to be earning to make a living. So that's difficult. And it's definitely a sacrifice. Like, I wouldn't discourage anyone who's thinking about it. I wouldn't discourage anyone, you know, and even in my situation, whereas when I started JetBooks, I had no kind of no real personal responsibilities, like, you know, no wife, no kids, no mortgage or anything like that. So, yes, it was easier. It was easier for me. I could go get a job as an accountant, earn a reasonably decent salary and be able to save that because I'm extremely frugal anyway. Whereas it's a little bit more difficult for someone who does have those personal responsibilities. But I think look at Will Sparks. Like, you know, there's someone who has basically all these things and still found a way to do it. So it is possible. It just takes a little bit of thinking about it. There are sacrifices, but they're all worth it for me.
This podcast is produced by JetBooks, an online bookkeeping service dedicated to giving you real-time financial information at the click of a button. Head to jetbooks.ie/resources to pick up our free step-by-step guide on how to automate your bookkeeping.
You are a very keen learner, self-learner, and really interested in, you know, what makes a good company tick, really interested in following successful business owners, investors. As you said, you've always got something in your ears or a book in your hands. If you were to try and pinpoint two of those people who've had a real influence on yourself personally or professionally or in JetBooks, who would those two people be and why?
The real kickstart for me was this book called and this is embarrassing, How to Make Millions Without a Degree by a guy called Simon Dolan, who started an accountancy firm, bootstrapped it to a pretty huge business, which he sold for, you know, 80 or 100 million in the end, a number of years ago. And that book has the foundations of pretty much everything in it. You know, there's a kind of a two-pager on what the EMIC is all about and the basic premise of that. There is a one-pager on the 80-20 principle. But I think the main point of that book, for me anyway, was just like, if you want to start your own business, just get on with it. Like, don't be thinking about raising money or, you know, whatever else is like, you know, you're wasting time with all that stuff, trying to think of the next best thing. What he calls sliced bread syndrome. You know, you're trying to think about this, you know, gizmo that will kind of change the world and all the rest of it, or you're trying to come up with the next Facebook, whereas you can just do landscaping and build that into a business. You know, given the right amount of time, you know, given a sort of 10 to 15 year period, you can build anything into what you want it to be. So don't worry about it. Just get on with it. And yeah, there is a kind of an undertone of, yeah, you can make millions and everything in that. But like, if you're running a business, you know, the success of your business is determined by, you know, the amount of profit that you make. So it gets people reading those, and they're obviously, you know, you don't want to be reading those books in hard copy in public or anything else. But yeah, so embarrassingly, that's a big one. Other things I've learned, I'd say the other big thing kind of personally is Ryan Holiday. You know, he wrote a couple of books on stoicism, and that really, if I think back to a book that actually changed my mindset or changed my life more than anything, it's been that book, The Obstacle is the Way, and his second book, Ego is the Enemy. Not his second book, but kind of his second book in that series. And those are really good for anyone, I think. You know, it's just how to deal with things going wrong and how to deal with obstacles. And it's really, you know, you're blessed. And it's funny, Pat Caslin, who was on the podcast, has done a lot of reading around this area. And, you know, you're kind of, you are gifted your obstacles. You know, those are what make you who you are, and that they're the things that make you good. And what make you better, you know, leaning into them and actually solving those obstacles is actually the way to be. And just not worry about, don't be sweating the small stuff, you know, things like that. So personally, you know, those two books have been incredible in terms of people. And I could go on all day, so I won't, but
I'll give you one more.
Yeah. Well, just in terms of people, anything to do with value investing, I will lap up, not only because value investors, like business owners, they're very reflective, but they're very big on sharing, and they're very big on giving, and in most cases doing the right thing. You know, like, loads of them won't, let's say, invest in a cigarette company because it, you know, causes cancer or whatever else. And even just getting their mindset and, you know, getting and hearing what they do and how they approach things, that's been really beneficial. So to name a few, Warren Buffett, obviously, but even more followers of Warren Buffett, like Manish Pabrai or our Guy Spear, have been very influential, and their books and their kind of YouTube videos and everything have been extremely influential throughout in the last 10 years, say.
What are you reading right now?
I am reading, there's a book called Dream Big, which is more of a story-based book about, he's Brazilian, so it's like George Paulo Lemon, and they essentially, he started an investment bank in Brazil in the kind of 70s or something like that, and they ended up buying InBev. So they ended up buying the biggest beer producer in the world. And they also own a number of other things, like they own Burger King now. And they just have a very interesting approach to how they do business. So, you know, meritocracy is very big for them. And what's really interesting is, you know, they buy a business and then they just, they go to whoever the best person in the world is at that particular thing. And they just copy that model and just put it in. Obviously, there's a lot of hard work involved, but I'm reading, it's more of a story-based format about them, but that's what I'm reading, and it is very interesting.
want to switch gears a little bit because you're often, obviously, the interviewer asking about everyone else's business, but we don't typically get to hear a lot about JetBooks. You know, there are a lot of little insights in this episode about your journey, but I want to spend a little bit of time on JetBooks itself because I think it's a really interesting story, certainly coming from your background and experience as an accountant. So I was looking back over our text messages in prep for doing this episode with you, and it got all the way back to the 23rd of January 2018, and there was just one text that says, "What do you think of the name JetBooks?" And at that time, you were certainly putting the meat and the bones of the business plan for JetBooks. What is JetBooks now? What is JetBooks today in 2021?
JetBooks is an online bookkeeping and accounting business. We do three things, really. We put in cloud accounting software into businesses. What that does, it allows businesses to get rid of a lot of manual work that they're doing within their finance function and allows them to automate a lot of things that business owners usually hate to do, like bookkeeping and everything else. The second thing we do is bookkeeping. So even though with the new technology that's come out in the last, 10 to 15 years, even with the automation and everything that comes with that, you still need a person actually doing the bookkeeping and creating the accounts. So that's the second thing we do. And the third thing we do is really kind of management accounts, key performance indicators for businesses, and just bits of advice and commentary around their business. That's it, and that's what we do.
So the bookkeeping profession as a whole is quite a cottage industry in Ireland, but it also, if you look around the world, it's very similar. The obvious question is, being, as we know, you're a fully qualified accountant, worked KPMG, worked in practice. Why a bookkeeping business? Why not an accounting firm?
Well, I'd worked in accounting firms, as you mentioned, and the biggest problem that we had in accounting firms was getting good bookkeepers to do the bookkeeping. So as you say, it's a cottage industry. You get varying levels of qualification, varying levels of experience. And there, to me anyway, that seemed to be the bigger problem to solve. That seemed to be where the issues were. You know, accounting firms, I mean, the services they provide are well served in Ireland and probably around the world. You know, there are a lot of accountants and they provide a lot of the same things. What there didn't seem to be a lot of, and still isn't really, are good bookkeepers mm-hmm. who would add value to the business, who would put in good processes, who would give you kind of the best practice things and who would automate things and kind of give as much time back to the business owner as possible and do a good, accurate job. And as we talked about earlier, you know, bookkeepers tend to be quite good at bookkeeping, but there's so much more to it. The client relationship side of things, there's, you know, maybe trying to add a bit more value to the business. So again, it's kind of finders, minders, grinders in that respect. So that's the reason. And also, bookkeeping is underserved because it's a very unattractive business to be mm-hmm. in. The margins are much lower than you would get in an advisory practice or that you would get in a standard accounting practice. It's harder to do and very labor intensive. So very much like booking in every single transaction in a business is difficult. It's difficult to do it correctly. And it's difficult to manage it in a way that you can do, multiple hundreds of clients at the same time. So that's a difficult problem to solve. And that's, I think, the reason why a lot of accounting firms don't provide it. And it was an area that I thought needed help, where I thought I could add value being an accountant, and somewhere I thought I could improve. So that's really why it's more bookkeeping, which in general is probably considered to be more blue collar and maybe lower brow than the kind of maybe kind of tax advice and other things that accounting firms do. But for me, it was very much just clicked with me. It made sense.
I think that's probably a stereotype or a stigma internally within the profession, right, within accounting bookkeeping profession. But from a business owner's perspective, and speaking personally, I mean, the value that a bookkeeper can add to a growing business is one of the most beneficial investments a business owner can make. Certainly, as you mentioned before, the business owner is trying to wear all the hats, and bookkeeping is one of those hats that they wear. And most business owners didn't go into business to do the bookkeeping and typically do a very bad job of it. So to see the actual value that comes from implementing a proper professional service like what JetBooks does into a business is truly invaluable for any size business. I mean, there's obviously a certain starting point where it's viable and makes sense. But I, again, from an outsider looking in, and I work with a lot of bookkeeping firms around the world personally, you've certainly added a layer of professionalism. And then with your experience as the accountant coming into the mix as well, adding that layer of value for the business owner has been, you know, certainly in the business owner's favor. So I commend you on that. Looking at it again with the lens of a business owner, it's often hard to understand what the true value is that a bookkeeper can add to their business, because typically the business owner just boils it in under the accounting umbrella. You know, you need a bookkeeper, you need an accountant. But can you help distill that for me and for the everyday business owner as to what JetBooks does with the business? Like, give us even a case study, if you like, of, you know, a business before and a business after JetBooks has worked with them.
Yeah, I think you're right, firstly, in that the accounting function and the finance function in a business is not usually the thing that you think about. It's very necessary in every business, but when you're starting a business, it's not the exciting thing, you know, is seeing the money come into the bank and matching it off with invoices or whatever it might be. Firstly, it's not really up the list on things that the business owner wants to do themselves. And so they tend to hire a bookkeeper as soon as they can to do that. Now, it's very difficult to find a good bookkeeper, and sometimes you won't know what you're looking for. It's hard to hire because you kind of have to go through maybe a few bad bookkeepers to understand what a good one looks like and what they actually do. I suppose in terms of like a typical case study for us would be and I'm just thinking of one example in particular, where I'm trying not to mention their name, you know, 2 million digital agency business. They've had a bookkeeper for a while. They've been working on Sage, which is not a Sage is a accounting software which doesn't allow for a lot of automation. It's very mm-hmm. clunky, and the bookkeeper liked to use Sage, so that's what happened. They had, you know, started their business, say, kind of, you know, 8 to 10 years ago, when Sage might have been the right thing to put into the business. And certain processes at that stage, even you know, it's not that long ago, you would have had to have done manually. Like, you had to do various things on a spreadsheet rather than having it automated through a kind of a better accounting system like Xero. Just typical things that was happening in the business. The bookkeeper had left, so they had, you know, quite a few months of catch-up bookkeeping to do. So they had maybe 3 months of accounts that they didn't have any oversight over what their profits were in those. They had some idea, obviously they know how much they've invoiced out. Mm-hmm. They probably had some ideas to how much they were owed and things, but like, you don't get a full picture by not having the bookkeeping done. So that was the first thing. Then all the processes that they had been doing previously were very manual and not very efficient. So, you know, one example would be creating invoices on Excel and then sending those invoices out. And then at the end of the month, the bookkeeper would have been looking at Excel and then posting those invoices directly into Sage. So straight away, you know, there's a huge opportunity there to just put in Xero and just send invoices out, professional looking invoices out directly from Xero. That's that whole thing. So what was happening is stuff going into Excel, being sent out manually in an email or attachment in an email or something. And then at the end of the month, the bookkeeper having to collect all that stuff and then manually enter each one into the system. Whereas now, all they have to do is create an invoice in Xero and just send it out. And all of a sudden, all the accounting and everything that goes on in the background is already there. You know how much you're owed at any given time, and everything like that. So there's just one example of a process that we would have fixed. So once you kind of fix those manual processes and automate them as much as possible, mm-hmm. and there's some quick and easy wins that you just might not think about if you had been doing something a certain way for 10 years, quick and easy wins. And then it's just getting a good bookkeeper that's going to give you the management accounts on time. You know, if the business owner is spending any time in finance, all they should be doing is getting the report at the month end, mm-hmm. reading it, understanding about their business, and then being able to make a decision. You know, anytime they're being brought into actually doing something like getting an invoice or anything like that, that's a real sign that something's wrong in the finance function. And it's a real opportunity for us to give that time back to them, go in and just fix everything. That's kind of typical. And I'm kind of keeping one particular client in mind, mm-hmm. but that's actually very typical. Bookkeepers leave, or they're not doing a good job, so you have to let them go. They're not using the right software. They don't really understand what the right process should be. They just take whatever the business owner might have just cast a half thought to back when they first opened the business. We'll just do it this way. And then the bookkeeper just takes that on, and there's no automation or no thought that goes into what's the best way to actually do it. And so we implemented that, and things are much easier for that client now.
So is it fair to say, on the other side of that work, implementing the systems, implementing better software, you know, taking advantage of the cloud accounting software systems that are available now, point of sale systems, all of those small changes, because then, I mean, some of them are a little bit more intensive, but a lot of them, the results you can get from the small changes are dramatic. Is it fair to say that the business owner, from their point of view, they're pulling their head out of being in spreadsheets, they're pulling themselves away from being, you know, managing shoeboxes of receipts and, you know, clunky invoices over emails and a lot of that manual labor that goes with managing all of that, and really lightens their load when it comes to managing the finance function of their business?
Like, a lot of business owners, actually, they hate it so much that they're not really involved in it. And if they're not involved in it, you know, all they care about is how they get their report at the mm-hmm. at the month end. So, you know, there might be some process that's literally taking someone a full day, someone that might be on a high enough salary, a full day of the month to do. But and it could literally be done in 5 minutes if it was done on the right software, if it was yeah. done in the right way. And so there's huge amounts of waste that could go unnoticed in a business if things aren't automated. And so, yeah, sometimes when the business owner is doing it themselves, they have a pain point because they don't want to be doing it. More often than not, it's just they have a bookkeeper doing it, and the bookkeeper is doing it in a really long-winded fashion and is not doing it in an automated way. And therefore, they're wasting huge amounts of time and ultimately money in the business because they're not doing it right.
So bookkeeping is quite a, you know, historical retrospective thing, whereas bringing your accounting experience to the table has allowed you to work with the business owner on, you know, looking forward in the business, providing insight into the business that they may not have necessarily had beforehand. Can you tell us about what that looks like for the business owner and what that gives them in terms of the ability to forecast or to look out into the future of their business in a much easier manner?
Well, and I was very surprised actually working in practice how few businesses actually use their management accounts on a monthly basis and look at them. Like, that is the scorecard of your business are the accounts. You know, what profit are you making on a monthly basis? What revenue did you bring? How much do you owe? How much are you owed from customers? You can't really run a business. And it just comes from having an accounting background. It's just, I think that I don't know how you could run a business without knowing those things. And so, once you have them and you have them to hand whenever you need them, if you're using technology to get those things on a more real-time basis, you're not getting them just 9 months after the month end or after the year end. You're getting them, you know, a few days after the monthly close. You can then use that to make decisions around your business. How much are we owed from customers at the moment? That's far too much. Let's start ringing customers and get the credit control up. We didn't make enough profit last month, or we made a loss. You know, what was that down to? Mm-hmm. Can we change that next month? And finding that out a month or, you know, within a few days rather than a month or 2 months or 3 months later is extremely valuable for a business mm-hmm. owner. And most business owners would know their business. They understand their business and they understand what to do when they see those things. Like, you'll ask a business, like, I can only see the number. So I'll say, oh, you had maybe a small loss last month. They'll, oh yeah, well, you know, we didn't, our Google ads were down and we didn't get enough leads in. So therefore it was just, it was a quiet month. Or we had one-off expense here, which you can see, blah, blah, blah. They understand. So they actually, they understand and they know everything, but they just need the
validation.
They need the information at their fingertips. And more often than not, they don't have it because the bookkeeper can't produce it in a timely fashion.
Mm-hmm. A shameless plug, and I'm doing it on your behalf, but I'm going to ask you to tell me who is the ideal client now that you've really refined your processes and your systems and your service offering. Who is the ideal candidate or ideal client for JetBooks?
We love working with service businesses that have been around for 3 to 5 years, who would have around $1 million in revenue, a team of 5 to 10 people. And those services business could be digital agencies, recruitment agencies, and any really kind of type of service business is where we're most strong. But we do have e-commerce businesses. We love software businesses. We are a service business, so we understand very much about tracking time. We understand all the KPIs that a service business needs to track. We can take things we learn from clients' businesses for our own business and vice versa. Anything that we have learned along the way, we can kind of give that as knowledge to the service business. So there's just a nice fit there, and those are kind of perfect businesses for us.
In growing JetBooks, Connor, have you taken any influence or inspiration from companies that you've researched or books that you've read? You know, you mentioned a couple now, but any that have had a dramatic impact on the way in which you've built JetBooks?
Yes and no. Like the model that we're following, the kind of bookkeeping as a, providing bookkeeping as a kind of team of people and as a company is very common in other parts of the world, such as your own Australia, or New Zealand, where Xero, the software that we use, comes from, or even in the UK. I do follow other, even just service businesses and things like that in those regions. And even naturally, when you're kind of starting up a business, you're kind of looking at, you know, what you might do or what you might start. And, you know, I could see the pain that we were having. I knew what my own skill set was and everything else. And then, you know, listening to podcasts and it all just kind of came together as one. So there's a couple of companies in America and Canada. One in America is called Pilot, and they are a VC-backed, very large bookkeeping business that Stripe have invested in. So there is there's one example of someone I follow. And then there's another one called Bench, who started in Canada, and they are they're in the American market as well. So they're kind of for much smaller businesses, but those are maybe two examples of ones I keep an eye on.
What's the biggest challenge that you've faced in building JetBooks today, and any lessons or insights as a result of facing it?
Getting out of my own way, probably without doubt, in just many things. And maybe I'm being a bit too harsh on myself, but just you have to do things, and all your kind of flaws and everything rise to the surface when you're running a business. So, you know, like, you know, the second person we hired on the team wasn't the right fit. I probably knew they weren't the right fit for months and months, and I just didn't want to do anything about it and face the problem. I think having let them go after 6 months and all the pain that caused them and me, I now have learned a big lesson there. But you know, there's so many things like that I just wouldn't have done before, or you come across them for the first time, and they're just they're very challenging. Everyone has to deal with these things in business, you know, mm-hmm. Letting go of people, letting people down, and so on and so forth. So, you know, something I'm really trying to work on is just not seeing these things as just massive problems over, you know, that we can't overcome. Mm-hmm. It's really about, well, it goes back to the obstacle is the way, you know, these things are actually good if I'm learning and we're learning as an organization by having to go through these things, then they are beneficial.
One of the things you've done to help get out of your own way and help develop these skills and overcome the challenges is embrace mentorship, which you've touched on already. Can you tell us a little bit about your mentality towards bringing in and engaging coaches or mentors into JetBooks and what effect that's had on your journey?
Well, like, as we talked about earlier, like, it's been exceptionally positive. Having more formal mentors and coaches, just even personally and for the business. In owning a business, you come across a lot of things that that are difficult to deal with, like letting go of staff and everything else. So just on the basis of bringing coaches on the personal side and on the business side has been there's been so many benefits from those couple of things alone. I'm trying to think of it like examples. It's almost just like, you know, a mindset in general is to all the problems that I face or have been faced by someone else before, there's an easy solution to them. And, you know, my emotional reaction to those things is actually not very important. It's just, there's a practical solution to everything. So, you know, that's been key. As I said, Mick scaring me into doing things has been key. It's really just given me more direction and lets me kind of focus in on what's important in the business rather than worrying about anything that, you know, probably won't happen in the future. But, you know, because I've seen an email, I'm now worried that that the whole thing's about to fall apart. So, you know, and just, even just helping clients, you know, you're way better equipped to kind of help people with their businesses or to help people with the problems that they're having if you are looking after yourself and if you have your own people that you can lean on and talk to about things. So, it's been very helpful. But the biggest impact has been just on my kind of general outlook and personal impact.
What's in store for JetBooks? What does the future hold?
So we're still a very young business. As you said, we're kind of 3 years old with maybe a bit of part-time work done before that. So we're an exceptionally young business. This for me has always been a kind of a longer journey. I think when I first started, I was like 7 years, but you know, when you started and you get into it, you start thinking, I've started thinking far more kind of long term about the business. So, and essentially just building out the team and growing it into a bigger and more sustainable business. Like, we have a team of seven at the moment, but all the roles that you would want to have covered, we don't have covered, you know, in operations. Manager and, you know, a head of sales and everything else. So, you know, over the next now 7 to 10 years, those will be the key things that we're focusing on. And we'll have to change with the times as well. You know, there's no, what we're doing now might not be the thing that we're doing for clients in 5 years time or whatever, depending on how technology and the world changes and everything else. But it's really about trying to serve those clients as best we can. And the way we do that is actually by building a bigger business. So that's the general roadmap over the next while.
Connor, congratulations on 12 months of a fantastic podcast. A very big congratulations on building what is now a very successful business, even though we're early in the journey. It is very successful in its own right. So it's a massive credit to you for what you do with your clients and your team. And I can't wait to see and talk about this in another 12 months' time and see where you're at. So thank you very much, as always, for your insights and for sharing so freely. And look forward to the road ahead.
Thank you very much, Brenton. I enjoyed that and I'm a bit nervous about putting it out. I might just delete most of it.
Do not. I've got full publishing rights on this one.
Thank you very much, Brenton.
Thank you.
This podcast is produced by JetBooks, an online bookkeeping service dedicated to giving you real-time financial information at the click of a button. Our team of qualified accountants leverage the power of cloud technology to automate your manual processes and cut the cost of your finance function in half. Head to jetbooks.ie/resources to pick up our free step-by-step guide on how to automate your bookkeeping. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe and leave a 5-star review. It really helps others to find the show. I'm your host, Connor Carney. Thanks for listening.